RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
Dr. Michael Fenster is a cardiologist, a gourmet chef, author, TV personality, and host of Code Delicious. Here's Dr. Mike.
Hey, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. It's Code Delicious with Dr. Mike, and time once again for a little culinary CPR with America's favorite chef, Chef Luca Paris. You know him, you love him, you've seen him all over Food Network. He practically owns the place. He has been nominated as a restaurateur, Chef of the Year, up in New Hampshire, where you can visit him personally at Luca's Mediterranean Cafe in Keene, New Hampshire. Luca, once again, my friend, so good to have you back on the show.
What's up, big guy? Great to be on. I've been working in my kitchens feverishly the last couple of weeks, and I'm having a lot of fun. I got to tell you, Mike, you have a great recipe. You have the recipe this week. Usually I give you one, but you came up with a really cool one. But I got to tell you what I'm doing tonight in the kitchen. It's kind of fun. We talk a lot about the Mediterranean diet, and we're going to veer off a little bit because you have this old world. I mean, talk about old world recipe. Recipe you're going to talk about today is ancient. That's where we got to go. Ancient world.
Old school, and we're ancient school.
Yeah. But I'm doing a request by a larger group. They asked me to do a Spanish tapas dinner. So I do Mediterranean food. I do all the flavors of Mediterranean. That's my wheelhouse.
A lot of people don't realize and really think of Spanish food as Mediterranean, but man, it's sitting right there.
Oh, it's you know, what's great about the Mediterranean, people forget about this all the time when you think about the countries. When they see the word Mediterranean restaurant, they'll think falafels and, you know, Eastern Mediterranean. But when you talk about the Western Mediterranean, which is pretty amazing, it's Italy, France, Spain, where the hub of this amazing food has been coming from all these centuries. And so I'm making this up, and as I'm going through their menu, I was looking at it right before we got on together. You know, we're doing the tapas with mussels and chorizo, a tortilla española, country-style marinated olives, smoked paprika, roasted almonds, grilled shrimp with garlic, gambas al olio, and manchego cheese, marinated manchego. But just those six items, we talk about simplicity, good flavors, healthy food, and how easy it is to eat like that in small bites. Whenever you discuss, you know, what's a healthy way to eat, that's one of the healthiest. It's got a lot of flavors, a lot of different, you know, hits all the flavors of the taste buds and all these scents and excites you, but you don't have to overdo it. And I think it's bigger than just the recipe here or there. It's eating like that and this kind of tapas feel or meze feel like the Greeks do. Man, if we could all just get back to that, we would be so much better off. I got to tell you.
And I agree. And I think that is really one of my favorite, you know, ways to dine is to have little sort of tapas type plates and a little sampling of this or that. And, you know, you bring up the Mediterranean cuisine. Well, there's actually, even though, as you said, folks, because of the way it was presented to the sort of modern Western world, if you will, through Ansel Keys' work in the 50s and 60s, people tend to think sort of Italian, you know, Greek flavors and flavor profiles, because that's really, he concentrated on Greece and primarily actually on Crete. And right. He made a number of misobservations, one because it was after World War II. So the diet was very different than what it usually was, when it wasn't sort of post-World War environment. And second, when he was on Crete, which has a huge Greek Orthodox Christian population, he observed for a significant time during Lent, when obviously the normal dietary patterns are slightly askew. So there is a sort of unintentional bias in there. But nonetheless, there's over 25 countries that border the Mediterranean. You have people forget North Africa, Egyptian.
Yes.
And they go right back then across, as you just talked about, to Spain. And kind of to segue, and why this, I think, is interesting, where we're going with this, is that think and go back in time. At one point, all of that was part of the Roman Empire, and that's where today's recipe comes from. This is really the origin of all of those.
When you look at the history, and food history is really incredible. When you look at the Mediterranean history of food, it was in the certain areas it came from, of course, it's regional because of the climate, the zone, the terroir, what they grow, what they fish, how they, you know, where the mountains are. That's important. But what you'll see is when the Roman Empire had kind of spread out, they took all these things from different areas and moved them around. And then also when the Moors invaded Spain, coming through North Africa and into Spain, their influence on the culinary world of Spain was dramatic. So it's you follow history, you could actually follow food, and they go really hand in hand. And that's, you know, as simple as tomatoes coming to the New World, or from the yep. From the old New World to the Old World, and the fact that we have tomatoes on pizza, which if the New World never got over here, we would never have had a tomato.
So right, what really, people don't. Yeah. People think about, Roman cuisine, and they try to equate it with a modern Italian, but that's totally incorrect, because in Roman cooking, there was no tomatoes, because they hadn't brought those back. Exactly.
There was no corn in northern Italy, and you can't even think about polenta without corn. I mean, you know, and even just some of the animals that we have over here now that we would have never had. So it's so amazing to follow that. And when you delve into the history of food, I think it excited me when I'm reading this recipe that you could make today and be excited about, and it sounds wonderful, but it's so old. It's entrenched in cuisine that sustained people and made that. They did it because it was healthy, you know, and they didn't even realize. They just realized that, well, this is good for us. We're going to keep eating it. And
they realized it tasted
great. Far away. And it, right. You know, we've gotten so far away from that.
It was really, and I think, folks, you know, if you're interested in this, if you like the history of food, which is the history of humanity, and the sort of lessons that we can learn from these ancient cuisines, head on over to Amazon.com right now while you're listening. Pre-order a copy of Ancient Eats by yours truly, Volume 1, where we're going to talk about ancient Greece and the Viking diets. But for example, they put these things together because they tasted great first. There wasn't this concept of nutrition. Where the nutrition and the health benefits come from is those foundation stones of the Mediterranean diet. It's real, authentic, wholesome food. It's not highly processed, highly refined. There's no added sweeteners, preservatives. Even a lot of the meats and poultry, etc., is what's produced regionally and locally, not sent off to a processing plant in Chicago, you know, freeze-dried, injected with a bunch of water fillers and stuff, and then, you know, showing up on a Cisco truck somewhere. So the recipe we were going to talk about today is honey barley fruit tartlets. And one other thing is I actually did this, and folks can look it up. There's a demo. I did this for Fox News when we're talking about the MIND diet, which is a variation of the Mediterranean diet, where they showed that adherence to following the principles and foodstuffs in this diet actually resulted in a very significant reduction, about, like a 60% potential reduction in your likelihood of developing Alzheimer's disease, memory loss, decline in cognitive function as we age. And so the difference one could say in, or the variation from the Mediterranean diet is probably a better term with this, is that I've added a lot of berries. So if you're in spring, summer, et cetera, when the certain different berries are coming in, while those might have been consumed in Europe and in Rome, and in fact, we know they were, I recommend just getting what you can in season, local and fresh. So in the U.S., that might be blueberries or even cranberries, you know, in the fall. And then combining them with, you know, some local honeys, or, you know, if you happen to be up in New Hampshire in the fall, you know, as a sweetener, you certainly could use maple syrup, right?
Exactly. Maple syrup. And you talk about mead. We have some good apple wines up here, too.
That'd be delicious.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to bring in all these flavors. And again, you know, we have apple orchards in the fall time, and we have vineyards that'll do apple wine. And those are really great. There's a mead place not too far from me. So when I read your recipe and I saw mead, I said, oh, that's going to happen in my world. And of course, local honey, we have bee growers is not the right term.
But I think beekeepers.
They're beekeepers. And so, you know, what you've come up with is, and what you've taken from this wonderful ancient recipe is a really simple dish with a ton of flavor and using what you have seasonal. It's perfect.
And folks, if you want, this is actually first described, written down. The recipe comes from Julius Pollux. And so he lived around the 2nd century CE. So guys, you know, we're talking about something that's, you know, 1,000 years old. However, this recipe is probably much, much, much older. In the research I did, and you'll see when you read Ancient Eats, and we talk about ancient classical Greece, they're talking about little honey tartlets and honey barley type cakes and pies and things exactly like this. The only reason we can't date this further back is that this is the first existing recipe that comes to light. It's the dish itself is mentioned all the way back to classical Greece. And Pollux actually was an instructor in Athens. So this probably, in my research and in my opinion, can easily apply to what would have been eaten and commonly consumed as far back as ancient Greece. So now we're talking about something, you know, that's well over 2,000, probably about 2,500 years old. And it's simple. You know, it's a cup and a half of barley flour, half cup of water, a little bit of honey, a little bit of olive oil. And you just kind of get together that in a dough, and then you just roll it out and you cook it. And I like the little tartlet pans because it gives you, it just is like you were talking about, Luca, that 1 to 2 bites of this nice crispness from and nuttiness from the shell, and then you get that great kind of fruit filling explosion.
So you use barley flour. Is there a bigger benefit to that than there is using, you know? Of course, we want to stay away from all-purpose flour, but why the barley flour as opposed to something else?
Well, one is that it is, that's traditionally what they use. So these were honey barley cakes. And
right.
In many areas in ancient Greece, which is, again, another reason I think that the origin of this recipe was ancient classical Greece, they grew a lot more barley than wheat because barley is just such much more of a durable, kind of tough grain as opposed
right.
to wheat. So they didn't have a lot of natural areas to grow wheat except sort of in the northern Thracian part of what we would consider sort of ancient classical Greece. Two is the flavor profile. You know, barley gives you just this very intense, earthy, kind of nutty, forms a very crisp shell. What folks don't realize too is that gluten is not just gluten. So gluten varies by the type of wheat that you use. So when we use modern bread wheat, which is 90%+ of what's found in everything that you eat that's made from wheat, you're getting modern wheat gluten. But when you're using barley, you're getting a completely different type of gluten. So for folks that have gluten intolerance, that it bothers them when they you know, eat something that's made from modern wheat, this, in many folks, is a wonderful alternative, and it's not going to upset them at all because barley hasn't been manipulated like modern wheat has.
And it's easy to find. I know we have it at our local stores. So getting barley flour is not that difficult. And, of course, you get it online if you really need to. So it's a wonderful thing. Yeah.
If you wanted to even do this and make something savory, you could use the same recipe, just leave out the honey.
Right. And you could use the tartlets for other things, too.
Absolutely, little savory tapas. If you wanted to do those little sort of tapas type servings, and you wanted to do something savory with just sort of that 1 or 2 bite amount, the tartlets, which are about under 2 inches, about 1¾ inches, kind of the standard little tartlet pan that I use. Then you get that 1-2 bites, and this would be great. You could almost make like a little rustic chicken pot pie kind of thing, open face in there.
There's a good chance that some of this might make it to my table tonight. I'm actually looking around and making, at the same time we're talking, I was like, I know I have barley flour around here somewhere. I'm going to put one of these together today. That's pretty awesome.
And that's a really, great wholesome eating. And you kind of look around and you say, hey, I've got this and I've got some, great. Now I can put together this wonderful dish. And for folks to make the fruit filling, all you have to do is take the fresh fruit. I just let it macerate with a little bit of the honey and the mead or whatever sort of wine that you wanted to use. I used a spice combination of a little cinnamon, mace, and cardamom, but you could use whatever you wanted. And another thing I think that is underrepresented when folks talk about the Mediterranean diet are nuts. and they were a huge part of the Mediterranean diet. And so I top this with just a little bit of freshly chopped nuts. If you have a nut allergy or you don't care for it, you don't have to. You can put whipped cream in if you like, but the nuts are more of an ancient topping than the whipped cream.
And what you're doing is by adding the nuts, whether you've toasted them, you could spice them a little, you could do just about anything to them. And I think this is the way we really need to learn to eat, too. It's about textures. You have the sweet and the softness of the fruit. You have the crunch of the barley. But just that other, there's a whole different crunch of the nuts on top, too, whether they've been toasted or flavored or some way like that. So there's definitely a lot that's going on in this dish. Even though it's simple, these textures and flavors are right there. It's a pretty cool dish, man. And there's a good chance I'm making these cups tonight for this dinner I'm doing. So.
Oh, well, I'd love to hear how they turn out, especially if you try to use them a little savory. So you've got to share that with us. That would be a great, follow-up to do this on another episode of Culinary CPRs, yep. To use these and then show the utility. Because like you said, when folks are busy, hey, you can make these. You can store these in the freezer and just pull them out, you know, and pop them back in the oven with a topping, you know, as the seasons vary. So. Yeah. Again, very, very flexible, in terms of kind of the things that we can add, sweet, savory, and then, you know, all through the season. I think
Go ahead.
Oh, so I was just going to say, and, you know, whatever you happen to have in your cupboard in terms of, you know, herbs and spices, you know, is kind of what you can use up here as well. I know you used, and we had talked in the past about putting a little bit of mint in here. Another great herb, basil, with this would have been another fabulous taste combination. And you hit on another key point, which is these ancient foods and these ancient cuisines, as you'll find in the book, which will be out this summer or fall, it's at the publishers right now, is how the ancients really had a wonderful grasp on the textures of food that I think maybe we've lost a little bit with the modern sort of homogenous processing. Because, for example, you know, one of the things that the modern food industry does in the chains is they say, well, people don't like to chew, so we're going to make everything kind of mushy and soft so that people don't have to chew, and they eat more, which makes them fuller, so they feel like they got a better bargain,
right.
And we don't upset them by having them chew too much. And you're laughing, but this is actually documented in scientific studies that these companies, the modern food, you know, conglomerates and agribusiness perform. It's kind of fascinating.
And kind of scary in the same way. There's the science of what you should eat to keep healthy, and then there's the science of what they can sell you to make money. So those are two different sciences to go from. But it goes back to, and we stress it every time on Culinary CPR, is healthy eating isn't about just watching what you eat and, you know, counting the calories and this and that. It's about finding good local foods, finding out where stuff is from, whether it's your fruit, whether it's your fish, buying the best quality ingredients, and then staying away from doing too much to it and then adding too much to it or doing anything processed to it. Just real simple. If you look at all the recipes, and I'm sure with all the research you've been doing on your stuff, the recipes are simple, and they bring out the essence of the food. So, you know, kudos to you, man. I always love listening to what you do and all the food you have going on, man. Perfect.
Well, I appreciate your expert insights. And I think, you know, what you just highlighted and you said so eloquently, that really is the Mediterranean-style approach. And, you know, folks, we're always talking about it. Hey, eat Mediterranean. It doesn't mean just eat fish. It doesn't mean just, you know, go get a can of SpaghettiOs.
Right.
It means following those principles that you just said, because, you know, it's the how you choose the food, not what you choose with the food. Hey, Chef, thanks again for being here. Folks, you can check out Luca at ChefLucaParis.com. You want to go there, visit him at Keene. This is Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. And until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.